2FM.
Now, time for something a little bit different. CNN journalist Don Riddle joins us to give us an insight into issues in Iranian football intertwined with the political unrest in the country at the moment. Don, firstly, thanks for taking the call. And could I ask you to perhaps give our listeners a general overview of what the lay of the land is in Iran at the moment, why these protest actions are occurring and how it has translated into sport?
Yeah, hi Shane. Thanks very much. Really appreciate you having me on to talk about this. What's happening in Iran is quite extraordinary at the moment. We're now into our third week of protests and demonstrations, which have really swept the length and breadth of the country. It's not the first time that protests have erupted in Iran. There were notably widespread protests after the 2009 election, which was disputed, and then 2017 and 18, they also had protests which initially stemmed out of the economic situation in the country. But the most recent one was spawned by a very controversial death of a young woman called Mahsa Amini, who was detained by the morality police because she had been found to be incorrectly wearing her compulsory hijab, and she later showed up dead. And this has absolutely enraged many corners of the population, but notably women, who feel the weight of the repressive government most pointedly. And so what's really unusual in this case is that it is a protest movement that is led by women. They are on the front lines, and many people in society are supporting them. And athletes are now involved as well. There was a very controversial execution of a wrestler called Navid Afkari a couple of years ago. He was hanged in 2020. And on the back of that, a lot of athletes, many of whom are now in self-imposed exile living outside of the country, they have formed together to form a campaign called United for Navid. And they are using their profile and their experience, their platforms, to try and push for change. And now kind of their movement and what's happening on the streets of the country once again have become intertwined. And it's kind of many athletes from many different sports, but football players are very much at the heart of this. And the timing couldn't be any more interesting with the World Cup now just a few weeks away. And of course, it's on Iran's doorstep. It's in Qatar. It's just over the Persian Gulf. And they're playing some very high-profile teams, the United States, England, and Wales. So, I mean, the timing is just extraordinary. And all in all, it's just an absolutely remarkable situation that's playing out before us.
It's probably the most serious challenge to stability of the regime in Iran, arguably the most significant one since the regime ascended power in 1979. So what is the feeling in how the state of Iran will look after this uprising, and how influential are these sporting figures within that?
Well, I think they're very influential, and you can tell that by the way the government has responded. You know, these aren't just any old footballers. I mean, the two of the most high profile are Ali Daei, who up until Ronaldo passed his international goal-scoring record last year, held the record amount of goals scored in international matches. He reportedly has had his passport confiscated by the government, so that's pretty serious. Ali Karimi is the former captain of the team, and he has not been at all shy and retiring on social media. He is actively encouraging the protesters to keep going. He's now been accused of fomenting sedition. He lives outside of the country. He lives in Dubai. But images have surfaced online of his home or his house in Iran being seized by the government. So these are very, very high-profile figures. And then you have current players, players who've been involved in friendlies recently in preparation for the World Cup. So we had a guy called Sardar Azmoun, who actually plays for Bayer Leverkusen as well. He's been very outspoken on social media, saying that he kind of recognized that he was in an uncomfortable position because he was on international team duty. But when he felt that he could speak, he did. And he said, I recognize that I might be dropped from the national team ahead of the World Cup. But he said, that is worth sacrificing for one strand of Iranian women's hair. Shame on you who kill people so easily. He was actually then picked in the friendly against Senegal the next day, where he scored a goal and notably didn't celebrate. And from what we understand, the national team is really split between players who are pro-regime and players who are more sympathetic towards the protesters and who feel really, really uncomfortable representing the team. Because, you know, I've heard this throughout my life and career, sport and politics shouldn't mix, but unfortunately they do. And people who are against the regime in Iran will tell you that everything is political in Iran. You cannot separate the two things. And so whether the players who are sympathetic to the protesters like it or not, if they go to the World Cup and wear the Iranian flag and the Iranian strip, they are kind of representing the government at a time of deep political instability back home. So it's really, really hard to know how it's going to play out from their perspective. And meanwhile, by the way, the United for Navid campaign and another human rights group called Open Stadiums have both lobbied FIFA and asked that Iran be thrown out of the World Cup. FIFA haven't responded. They haven't responded to CNN's request for a comment either. So, I mean, this is all kind of, you know, reaching a really fascinating situation. And as for what happens next with the protests, nobody knows. I mean, it does kind of feel like we're in uncharted territory here. I think it surprised people that the protests have gone on as long as they have. We're now, as I say, well into a third week. But what does happen next? The images that are appearing, the videos that are appearing out of a country which is now suffering from, you know, severe internet restrictions because the government is trying to stop these videos and images getting out. They do seem to be getting worse and worse. The crackdown from the authorities seems to be becoming more and more violent. But we don't really know where it's going to lead. But we are, as I say, in, you know, an extraordinary position.
From your understanding and from delving into the story, like, I know officially FIFA forbids any government influence on football governing bodies, but in this instance, realistically, how much power does the government hold over Iranian football? And are they now very worried that these players could spark even more discomfort by showing some form of protest on the world stage in Qatar? Or could they effectively gag them if Iran do line out in the World Cup?
I mean, I think the government will be worried. I think they have been really surprised by the level of anger and disquiet, and it's not going away. You know, I think you have to look at the position of each of these individual players within the squad, and there's going to be 26 of them going to the World Cup. They all have different stories, different experiences, different backgrounds. Some will be freer or not to speak. I don't think it's any accident that Sardar Azmoun has been particularly vocal. He plays in Europe. I don't know his personal situation. I don't know how many family he is still back in Iran. But, I mean, of the athletes I've got to know covering different stories about protest movements related to Iran involving athletes, the ones that are the most outspoken are the ones that have left the country. Their families either are out of the country also, or they're supportive of what they're doing. Or, you know, I mean, there's one guy, for example, that I would love to interview because I'm actually writing a book about this subject as well. And I probably can't because although he's left the country, he has a lot of investments and property in Iran. And so he doesn't want to get tangled up in that. So it's really hard to know what these players are going to do when it comes to the World Cup. But, I mean, the stage will be theirs if they want to. The eyes of the world watching has some incredibly high-profile games against England and the United States. Two countries whose governments have condemned what's going on the streets of Iran at the moment. So, but it's just difficult to know what's going to happen, what they will say, what they will do. When they played Senegal recently, which was a big game for them against the African champions, they got a draw in that game. It was hard to know of the exact intention, but they seemed to kind of cover up, you know, the tracksuit and the flags when they were taking to the field in the warm-up. And many people interpreted that as a snub towards the government. But because they didn't come out and comment on it, it's kind of hard to know if that's actually what they were intending to do. But a whole bunch of those players' social media pages, if you look at the Instagram avatars, they've either changed their faces or their images to black, or it's an outline of the country's geographical borders in black. So it does seem that quite a few of them appear to be sympathetic to the protest movement.
Because I know there was a lot of media attention around that friendly in Austria as well, because it was more very much at the last minute that fans weren't allowed in, and there was a cohort of Iranian people that were outside that were protesting, and you could kind of hear in the background that I think I'm right in saying even there were media reports that in Iran that where the match was played that they nearly lowered down the level, so they're trying to even just quieten people from outside the stadium so you could hear nothing as well. And that probably ties in with the internet blackout as well, to have this regime and the morality police, they say no, everything is fine and we can just carry on.
Yeah, but it's getting harder and harder for them to quieten those voices down, and you know, the longer this goes, the worse it kind of gets for the government. I mean, Mahsa Amini has emerged as a martyr for the anti-regime cause. It could have been a different young woman a couple of years ago. Saha Khodayari became known as Blue Girl. You may have heard about her, Shane. She was trying to get into a soccer match dressed as a man because women weren't allowed. And she was arrested, sentenced, and she set fire to herself outside of the courthouse in 2019 and died. It's hard to explain why she didn't become the martyr that Mahsa Amini became. But now, as this thing goes on and longer and it's getting more and more violent, new martyrs are inevitably going to emerge. So, for example, literally in the last couple of days, social media has been awash with images and the story of Nika Shakarami, who was believed to be protesting, disappeared for days. Eventually, her body showed up, mutilated and in an awful state. And so kind of already the movement that was begun by the treatment of Mahsa Amini has now moved to Nika Shakarami. And it's the government must feel as though they're in a really, really awkward position, because clearly they want to crack down, but the more they do, the worse it gets for them. And again, who really knows or understands where this is going to go? But I think what is clear is that the protesters really are more fired up than they ever have been before. There's a phrase in Farsi: when you're kind of upset or annoyed or angry, it's basically your fire. And people that are now, might once upon a time have been worried that protesting could lead to, you know, a beating or a shooting or ultimately their death. You know, the phrase now is, you can't burn women who are made of fire. And that really speaks to the kind of the level of anger and where we are at in this situation now. Like, a lot of these people feel as though they just don't have anything to lose anymore.
Well, we'll leave the conversation there, Don, because that's a very powerful ending, and it will be interesting to see how this does develop in Iran. And as you mentioned, particularly with the Qatar World Cup, only, what, a matter of 5-6 weeks away now, because there is widespread uncertainty for any sports organisation that represents the Islamic Republic of Iran, really. But just coming full circle and just finishing off, the last World Cup group game is against the USA. So all eyes of the West will stay on Iran throughout this tournament. And they could, in theory, be battling for a knockout position in the World Cup.
Yeah, potentially. Yeah, it's England first on November the 21st, then Wales, then the USA on November the 29th. So absolutely that game could be all about a place in the knockout round. I think a lot of people in the Western world have probably completely dismissed Iran as having any chance in this World Cup. And maybe that's partly because they didn't really know much about the team. But the USA are really struggling. I'm sure you know England are really struggling. Mm-hmm. On the last international break, the Iranian team performed best. They beat Uruguay and then drew with Senegal, the African champion. So, I mean, those were two great results. But I think the way this is lining up, whatever happens in this last game against USA, it's not going to be just about what's happening on the field. There is going to be such a profoundly important subplot or backdrop to this game. No way anybody's going to be able to keep politics out of it. Like, we're way beyond that point now, I think.
No, absolutely. It will be extremely interesting to see how this pans out, whether Iran will compete in the Qatar World Cup a matter of weeks away, and indeed, if they do, what squad will be selected, if certain players might maybe overlook. Don Riddle, CNN journalist, thank you so much for taking the call. A very interesting subject.
Game on 2FM. 2FM.